Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we're back. Surprise, surprise. Episode 66. Acting like it's a Monday. We're just like Beck, except we only have the microphone and not two turntables. What else can I say?
I don't know.
Nothing else to say, really, but yes, we're back, and this week it's a trip down embarrassment lane.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna open up and bare our souls and talk about some of our biggest haunts, screw-ups, foul-ups, blunders, errors, mistakes, cock-ups, screw-ups, and otherwise bad ideas.
Yeah.
That summarize it?
Yeah, it does. You repeated yourself, so... But
I did? Okay, well.
It's kind of fitting.
Yes, it is. That I would screw up the intro on our biggest haunt ones. Yes, it is.
Yes, you guys didn't hear it, but he also screwed up the cue up. So.
I do that every week. That's kind of my thing at this point. And the part that doesn't make air is usually even more error-ridden than the part that does.
That is sometimes true. It was
but yes,
today.
We do have to do conference reminders. Shall we plow through these? And we've done a spin through and some updates, so let's go.
Sure. All right, I'll start off this week. March 23rd through the 26th, so later this month, Transworld Halloween and Attraction Show, St. Louis, Missouri, America Center. Early bird discounts are still going on.
Yeah, through March 20th, I checked it out.
Yeah.
So you technically can sleep in on these early bird discounts.
Yeah, it's $50 off through March 20th. New this year is Escape Room City, a zone all about escape rooms, which is a common theme in all the conferences.
Yeah,
it seems.
We got a lot of that going on right about now. Like, the next one up is May 1st through... Oh, sorry. The Ha Show.
Yes, exactly.
It's the Ha Show.
You can find out more at
Ha Show. You learn more about the Ha Show, HaaShow.com. I just totally... Yeah, see, blunders. It's going to be a thing.
It's on your mind, so you're doing it more often.
You're damn right. I'm good at blundering. This is like my area of expertise. I can do this all hour. But yes, after that, May 1st through the 5th, it's the Room Escape Conference and Tour in Niagara Falls, New York at the Niagara Falls Convention and Event Center. They'll be touring the Five Wits Escape Games Canada and Locked Up Escape Games. The conference is the 1st through the 3rd, tours are the 4th through the 5th. Learn more at roomescapeshow.com. Get your passport now if you intend to go on all the tours, because you will be visiting Canada, the land of maple syrup, Ellie, and other great things.
Yeah, and rocks and trees.
Rocks and trees, and trees and rocks.
Yes.
And water.
Yes.
If you don't get that one, look up Arrogant Worms and call me in the morning. You'll thank me.
Yeah, Arrogant Worms are pretty great. Okay, so then in May 12th through the 14th, we have West Coast Haunters Convention at the Doubletree Hotel in Portland, Oregon, touring House of Shadows, a multi-attraction haunt.
Learn more.
Sure that there will be others to be...
Actually, that's the only tour they're doing.
Only tour.
Yes, they are doing one night of touring from what they have on their site right now.
Okay, cool.
This is one of the updates.
Hauntersconvention.com to find out more about what's going on the rest of the conference.
And I will say this, and when I say it is a multi-attraction tour, I am not multi-attraction haunt. I am not kidding. Their brochure lists like 6 different attractions on site.
Oh, so it's like a whole theme park.
Yeah, it's like a whole lot of stuff you're touring on this one, guys. I'm just saying, it's kind of cool.
That is cool.
I'm very curious about this one.
I can see why there will be only one.
You're only too tired after this tour. You will not need another haunt tour.
Exactly.
Well, after that, it's the Midwest Haunters Convention, June 8th through 11th in Columbus, Ohio at the Greater Columbus. I think I actually spoke at a conference there.
Oh.
I think the AMWA conference I spoke at was there.
Yeah, probably.
The one where I stayed at the really bad hotel?
Yeah, yeah.
Do not stay at the Knights Inn in Columbus for the love of God.
Yeah, that was bad choice.
That was a terrible idea, and I'll tell you more. They'll tell you the full story behind that later. But they'll be touring the Scaratorium, Scare Factor, Dead Acres, / Haunted Hoochie, and there is a late night monster beach party. All on the same night, so pick your poison, folks. Learn more at Midwest Haunters Convention. The S is hanging out in there.
.com.
.com.
Then July 29th and 30th, it's Midsummer Scream. Although, you know, it says midsummer, but that's at the end of summer.
Yeah, you know, I think we have a different definition of summer in New Orleans.
Well, yeah, we don't have seasons.
Yeah.
Anyway, Midsummer Scream, Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California. By Creepy LA and Theme Park Adventure, Long Beach Convention Center, as we said earlier,
mm-hmm.
MidsummerScream.org.
And then at Scare LA, and we get to finally update this one. It's Yay. August 5th through 6th at the in Los Angeles, at the Los Angeles Convention Center, West Hall. There's 200 plus vendors plus panels on the haunted attraction industry. A lot of great stuff. They had all kinds of cool celebrity hosts last year. Probably more soon to be announced. Elvira hosted last year, if I recall correctly. Right. So ScareLA.com. Get in line on this one, guys.
Yep. And then August 25th through the 27th, it's Halloween and Haunt Fest show in Dallas-Fort Worth at the Mesquite Convention Center. HalloweenandHaunt.com. And to find out more and keep up on anything that they put out there.
Yeah,
for
they
us.
Don't have anything on that site. Just
well,
trust
it,
me.
Well, it's still a long ways away.
They have the date, and that's about it. I'm telling you, I was just there.
There's the center too. There's where it's gonna be. You know where it's gonna be and when it's gonna be.
So, all right, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, this week's topic is going to be a little bit of a, I guess, a comeuppance for us in a way. Because we're not perfect. We've never claimed to be perfect. We've right. never claimed to be experts, just passionate about this industry, passionate about this field. Now, we've run our little haunt for about 11 years, and we've worked in many others.
Yeah.
So I think we've got probably just the two of us working together about 15 years, plus right. all the crap we did before we met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there was a whole time before we met. I can't fathom it. It's so weird to even think about that existing, but here we are. But nonetheless, we've done more than our share of stupid mistakes and or participated in them.
Right.
And so we decided to do this episode sort of highlighting some of the really dumb crap we've done.
Right. So that maybe if you're thinking of doing something that we've done that we learned from
don't
while
do it.
You're doing your build right now, don't.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Now, I will say this. We are focusing on our errors.
Right.
And the reason for this is we were talking about this idea for an episode. And one of the problems we came up with is, yeah, we should talk about like stupid stuff we've seen at other haunts that we visited.
Right.
And then we realized, yeah, we aren't very good at remembering stuff that doesn't scare us.
Well, and it's not only that, but if you build something to know how it's supposed to work, the customer doesn't always know that it's not working the way that you intended.
It's like when you're a musician on stage and you screw up. They always tell you when you're public speaking or doing music that you just keep moving.
Yeah.
And the next thing, because 99% of the audience isn't going to realize you screwed up.
Yeah.
And so you just keep moving and you're fine.
Yeah.
It's very similar with haunting. We don't see the screw-ups. Even the people that are like vets in this industry don't see the screw-ups.
Right.
A lot of the time. So, yeah. And honestly, we couldn't think of any. We thought of the safety stuff that we mentioned way back in the safety episode.
Well, and then there was that guy that talked at HauntCon that you were in his panel. He talked about using the wrong kind of wood outside, you know, multiple years in a row.
Yeah, we haven't made that mistake. We do know the difference between pressure-treated and non-pressure-treated lumber.
Right.
We have figured that one out, and we figured that one out a long time. In fact, we never really needed that one figured out.
Right. But
yes, here we are.
Yeah.
So, real quick, a bit of haunted history for the two of us.
Yeah.
And we're going way, way back to when we were both kids and young adults and so forth.
Right.
And maybe this is like my attempt to kind of explain or justify some of these stupid mistakes. But you have to realize my very first experience haunting, going all the way back to when I think I was like 12. I always loved Halloween as a kid. I always loved trick-or-treating. I loved being in costume.
Right.
And I think I might have told this story way back in like episode 1.
Yeah.
But it bears repeating in this context.
Right.
I told my dad that, you know, I really love Halloween, but I think I'm getting too old for trick-or-treating. Because, you know, you kind of, like, look around at trick-or-treating, like, you realize you're a foot taller than everyone else trick-or-treating. And you kind of realize you don't belong. I had that moment. And I'm like, but I don't want Halloween to end. And so he says, well, good news, you're with me this year. And we're going to scare the trick-or-treaters. And for the very first year, he got one of those stupid ghosts on a little fishing line thing.
Yeah.
It goes, ooh-wee, it like shakes. It was like, this was like some, you know, early 90s crap here. And anyways, his idea was to have it come drop down so when people like rang the doorbell, it would give them a good startle.
Right.
And to do that, he managed to take a piece of high-test fishing line, run it through the eave right there, into the attic, through an eye hook, back down into the HVAC system, through the actual ductwork, out a vent that was right by the door.
Yeah.
So he could basically do it right there beside the door. And my job was, I was the little vampire, spook him, skull up. And it was an amusing little gag where I had to make the ghost go away if the kids got too frightened. Right. That was my first experience. And that gag is way overthought.
Yeah.
My dad spent way too much time, way too much complexity, and though nothing went wrong, like the adult means like there are so many ways that could have gotten screwed up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it could have. And meanwhile, on the opposite side, my family also had something that came down, but my mom had rigged it through a single eye hook and directly to the door so that whenever you opened the door, it would come up, because it was hanging in the knee.
You see, that's like so much better than this random crap. But you have your own history of being overbuilt.
I do.
Your dad.
My dad overbuilds everything. He overbuilds for, like, toddlers.
Yeah.
So that if a toddler were to run into it, they would get knocked out, basically.
Amazing. We're trying to kill the kids.
But whatever's built is going to still stay built. Yes. You know.
Well, I mean, and like an example is he actually made my desk.
Yes,
he did. The one I still use. And by the way, talk about longevity. That desk has been in our family now for 12 years.
Yeah.
For damn near 12 years.
Nope.
So longevity's there. It also weighs roughly 3 metric tons.
Yeah.
You cannot move it.
No, not by yourself.
No, not by yourself. And then that is with it coming apart into sections.
Right.
For the record.
Yeah, because it comes apart into 4 sections.
Yeah, is it 3 or 4? I think it's 3.
Well, it's the triangle, top, the underside on the right, and then the shelving unit on top.
Oh, yeah. I forget about that shelving unit.
Yep.
I forget about that shelving unit because I don't think of it as part of the desk. You're absolutely right, though.
Right.
But, yeah, the bottom line is you can't move any one of those pieces by yourself. It's impossible.
Yes.
The thing probably literally weighs close to a ton.
Yeah.
It required a major truck to get down. So, yes, we have a history of our parents teaching us how to overbuild and overthink things.
Right.
And that went right into our very first year of building a haunt.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
And our very first major haunt screw-up. The worst idea for a gag we've ever done, honestly. Yeah. Because it just failed on every level.
Yeah.
Now, we did not use the entirety of our structure that year.
No.
We only had a couple of months to build and prep. And right. We were starting from complete scratch. So we were building the panels. We were painting the panels.
Yeah.
We were assembling the panels.
We had no idea what we were doing.
We had no idea what we were doing. And we were starting from literally a concrete slab.
Right. And we had just bought a house. So funds were pretty low right then, too.
So we only used about, I think, half the structure. Ended up being about how we used. So we had about essentially like a 400 square foot. This is like when we talk about a small home haunt. This was at that time. It's gotten much bigger now, thank God, right?
Yeah, it's less than 400. It was less than 400.
It was probably about 300 square feet total. Yeah. But the bottom line is it's gotten much bigger.
Yes.
But the thing is, one of the things we wanted to do was have it so that we could have one actor operate 2 scares.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was he would come out and pop around a curtain, pop around a blind corner and scare them. But he could also trigger a swinging head. So as they were moving down the path, the swinging head would come toward them.
Right. This is before we knew not to scare backwards.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's failure 1.
Yes.
Failure 2, though, is we never had to worry about scaring backwards because no one saw the bloody thing.
Yeah.
No because kidding. It came with no sound, and it was way too flipping subtle.
Yeah.
Third, it never worked reliably because it was overthought to hell.
So, who was the one that came up with this grand... Yes, exactly.
I'm sorry, I'm a drunk, over here. I'm not going to take ownership of it. You know, it was totally my idea.
Yeah.
The idea was, it was very similar to the ghost. The reason to tell the ghost story was this one. You can see the homage to my father on this one.
Yes.
Because the wiring on it, high-test fishing line again.
Yes.
Wired through a series of eye hooks that took it from one side of the structure up into the rafters. over, down.
Yeah, and through a PVC pipe. Through a PVC pipe
at one point that we got snagged up. So, yes. And then back down onto the other side with two strings, one that held it up against the garage until it was ready for the release, and the release was on the other side.
Yeah.
Overthought to hell.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can think of 100 easier ways to do this scare. Not that I would, because it has no sound, it scares backwards, no one sees it. Oh, it was just a terrible scare. And it did not work reliably. I think it executed like 5 times, scared no one.
Yeah.
And basically ate up like 2 days of our build in a very cramped season.
Right. And, you know, I think that the guy behind the curtain was more scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we had the static prop there that you had recorded a voice for.
Yeah.
Because was Vincent's victims the year.
Yeah, I remember that year, yeah.
Yeah.
That actually was pretty cool. That part was actually pretty neat.
Yeah.
Because I actually kind of liked that setup because you had a static prop in a room and he was sitting there and he was mumbling and we set the speaker right underneath him so he couldn't see the speaker.
Right.
But it was him talking. It was projecting from him. It was a very good directional sound.
Yeah.
And he's mumbling and he's talking and then the actual guy swings around a corner and comes at you. You're just totally, you're expecting that dude to move. That was a good distract and startle.
Yeah,
that was a well-executed move.
It was.
The swinging head that came after it sucked.
Yeah.
And see, that's just it. It's like for every idea I think sucked, we usually had it paired up somewhere with something that worked.
Right.
So I don't think we had any total epic failures.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had more than our share. So yeah, that one just did not work. Now, however, it did come back in a better version.
Mm-hmm.
A few years later, we revisited sort of the basic structure a little
bit.
But we did it with a limb drop room.
Yeah.
Which was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Because what we had was a guy pretending to be a prop suspended, and we're going to come back to this guy in a minute.
Yeah, me.
Me, yes. But connected to him was a bunch of wires that went to limbs that initially were way up out of everyone's range.
Right.
But you could see them dangling in the air, look like a butcher's workshop type thing. And when the actor came alive and went for the scare, all the limbs just came straight down.
Yeah. Straight down, up,
down. You can puppet like a giant marionette thing with these limbs.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome.
It was very, very simple to set up. It did not fail even once.
No.
And that got some reactions.
Yeah.
All these limbs bouncing around in a room, people lost their shit.
Yeah, they did. Well, I mean, I can remember showing it to my dad the first time because we had described what we had done.
Yeah.
And he was walking through and I moved and it got him.
Yeah.
He knew it was coming, and I was still able to get him. And he's like, that's successful.
And see, that I think is like one of the reasons why it's important to acknowledge when you screw up.
Yeah.
It's because sometimes you can take the core of it.
Right.
Or a piece of it and do something better. That limb drop room remains to this day one of my favorite sequences. So we got to bring it back. We got to do something like that again.
Okay.
We got to do something with it. Maybe not this year, but a year in the future. We got to do it again. Just because it was that awesome.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to work.
It wouldn't work this year, but not with the theme. But, okay. But the point is, we got to bring it back at some point. It's got to be a room that comes back.
Yeah.
Because that was just too good.
Now, if we're actually trying to stay a little bit more chronologically, we should jump down in the list,
okay.
Too.
Go ahead.
So, our first real year.
Yeah. When we used the entire building.
The entrance was a long hallway.
Yeah, and this is one of those things, like, you go to HauntCon, everyone's like, don't make long hallways, don't make long straight paths. I'll tell you why you don't do that.
Yeah.
Because it hurts.
Yeah. Okay, so the hallway was beautiful. It's actually one of my favorite sets
that I've ever designed. Oh, yeah, as far as, like, decoration goes, it was top shelf.
Because there were chandeliers, there were windows, the middle window that was towards the end was a drop panel, there were bars over the window made out of PVC, so you couldn't tell them apart.
For all the crap we get about being a little home haunt sometimes, or a quote-unquote little home, not a little home haunt, but not little.
Yeah.
For all the crap we get about it, I would put that scene, that hallway, decoration-wise, against anything I've seen in a professional haul in terms of look. Just about anything.
Yeah.
It was that well done.
Yeah, it was one of
my favorite scenes of any haunt I've ever been to, period. And that's we've done some really crappily decorated scenes. I'm very objective on this.
Yeah, I know. I am too. I think that this past year was the most successful as far as
getting to
the vision that I wanted.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway. So this hallway.
Long straight hallway.
Drop panel hits. What do people do?
At least 15% of them ran right back the hell out.
Yep.
And it was bad for me in particular, because I'm running front of house on this. I'm doing the orchestra. I'm letting people in. We had no any misdirection on the entrance.
Right.
Which is now something we do every time.
Yeah.
That has stopped. But they would actually, at least in a couple of occasions, literally plowed into my back. If you watch WWE and you've seen like Goldberg's spear, that happened to me like a couple of times a night for that season, that run there.
Right.
And then at least once I got propelled about 10 horizontal feet, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a few hard knocks on me. So yeah, that one, yeah, no long hallways was the big lesson there. And not only did we start doing confusion hallways and things like that and disorientation at the beginning, but we also, that was the year after that, we introduced the Stalker.
Right.
Which was someone who's designed to stay behind them. It's sort of a zone captain feature where someone stays behind and pushes the group forward.
Right.
Which we can do because we only let in one group at a time. It'd be more difficult with multiple groups in the haunt.
Right.
But you can always have someone, make sure someone's behind the group, nudging them forward if they have a tendency to get stuck or try to retreat.
Right, and it's also good to have someone there just in case someone does have a severe reaction to being scared.
Or just,
you know.
Or falls, or just something happens.
They fall, they pass out, they lose their glasses, you know.
You know, accidents happen regardless of being afraid sometimes. You're right, though. It does make it worse, but, you know, it happens. Mm-hmm. So be prepared for it, basically. Shortly after that was the mess that was the pressure pads, though.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
This was a lesson about buying cheap.
Yeah.
Is what this really was. We had been really buckling down on our electronics.
Yeah.
Really studying ways to integrate electronics and more into the haunt. We pride ourselves on being more gravity-centric, as I like to think of it. What the kids next door would call 2x4 technology is more our style. We really love using gravity. We really love being creative with actor position, blind spots, distracting startles, etc. But we're learning about the use of pressure pads and electronics, etc. And basically, we scooped up a bunch of really ridiculously cheap pressure pads.
Yeah.
From a local hardware store. It will not be named.
Yeah.
Though I will say it is a part of the sea and a type of shipping.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's fine.
But we picked up a bunch of these pressure pads and got out the solder gun, did this electronics work.
Right.
And wired them to a bunch of small LED tea lights.
Right.
Now, why would we do that? Well, this way, we could cue the actors on when to drop the panel. You see the light, you drop the panel, you do the breakaway ball, you activate your scare.
Right.
And it was more of a cueing mechanism.
So that we wouldn't have... And more for the drop panels, so that I could hide them completely without having to have a hole for the actor to look through.
Didn't have to worry about eye holes, didn't have to worry about anything.
Didn't have to worry about different height actors.
I think we positioned nearly half a dozen of them.
Yeah.
Across the haunt.
Yeah.
For various scares. I know one area had three alone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and this was something we tested this rigorously.
Yeah.
We really did test the ever-loving hell out of this. We brought new people into the haunt. We did it ourselves. We tested. Yeah. It worked so beautifully. We adjusted the positioning to make sure the timing was right. We tested if people were running. We tested people were walking slowly. We tested. And what happens on like the third group? Half of the wires get yanked right the hell out by some scared group that just tore up all our crap.
Yeah. Without even realizing it.
They didn't even know they were doing it. It tore up all the wiring, and we had no way to signal half the scares for the rest of the night.
Well, we came up with a sound cue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always tricky because the actor's not always going to hear you.
Not always going to hear you, and it could be mistaken for something else.
Right.
And you're also alerting the customers, too. The customers hear the same sound.
Right.
So that was, and basically that year, luckily it happened, the tearing, the destruction happened on the first night.
Yeah.
So we were able to get the cordless drills in.
Yes.
And do. I think the next day was eye hole day.
Yeah, exactly.
Putting eye holes in every goddamn thing.
Yeah, and luckily that season was, since it was so early in our history, we didn't have a lot of people the first night as compared to the next two.
Yeah, that was definitely a slow night. But
yeah,
that one group, I mean, I remember them pretty well. They were, I think I referred to them as the pinballers.
Yes.
Because they pinballed through the entire damned hall.
Shuffling their feet.
Wall to wall to wall. Shuffling and tearing out at least half the wires.
Yeah.
And but like, that was the thing. It's like when half of them went, we're like, well, we can't count on any of them.
Right.
So we pulled up all the pads and just said, we've got to find a better system. Yeah. Eye holes were dug in. Light cues were created. We, you know, I mean, we came up with alternatives, but it was a hasty, hasty thing that season.
Yeah.
That was rough. And so, yeah, if you're buying your pressure pads, buy good ones.
Yeah, one more real quick cue on that, though.
Yeah.
We did go the next year to the sound, to the remote controlled lights.
Yes.
So we put a remote control light inside of the actor area, and the stalker would have the remote in order to activate scare
and
that
then
way.
And that failed pretty badly, too.
That failed. Well, it lasted longer, but it did eventually fail, yes. We don't use that anymore.
Yeah, the problem is that system was not nearly as reliable. Basically, what it came down to is we just realized we have to give our actors the ability to see and then trust them.
Yes. Make sure that they have timing or some kind of cue.
The best thing you can do with that, I guess, is trial runs and trying to get them to build up the timing. Because you can't teach timing.
Right.
We've said this repeatedly on this podcast. You can't teach timing. Timing is almost innate.
Yeah, but you can teach someone. If someone gets to this point, you need to do it.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be too late.
Exactly. So, yeah. You can teach timing, but you can help them along a little bit.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a major series of screw-ups right there. And that, luckily, it wasn't expensive.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was really frustrating for me because I spent so much time learning electronics and learning how to do it and really getting halfway decent at the electronics components of
it
to do this. Not like great, but enough to be able to wire this stuff up and then have it instantly destroyed. Oh my God. All right. Well,
so,
Another one we did that was a nasty, nasty screw-up. This is from a design standpoint here.
Right.
The hairpin turn room.
Yeah.
Oh, this was a disaster.
Yeah. Well, and I think this was our third year.
Yeah. We're doing all the early stuff, thank God, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't have any really, really big ones except for, you know, 2 years ago.
No.
But we'll get to that later.
No.
So, the thing about this is we realized when building it, that people might not know where to go.
Yeah.
So we put these big, bright, fluorescent orange arrows.
Yeah.
Go this way. You know?
Well, the basic problem was we used the entire unit we had, and then we realized we needed to really try to maximize our space.
Right.
And so we did what most people do in this situation, pull out the graph paper, and we started charting the ways we could really make the best walking path.
Right.
And still allow actor areas and still allow that stuff.
Yeah.
And one year we came up with this very, very bizarre, very stupid yin-yang design where you would come up, go from the front to the back, then go to the center, the very center, then do a hairpin turn.
Yeah.
And then that hairpin turn room was really an interesting idea in some ways because the whole point of it was we wanted to have a bigger room in the center,
mm-hmm.
but we wanted to have it have a longer walking path. And we didn't really do much of prop-based layout then. Good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we didn't want to do much of prop-based layout, so we built like this half wall to nudge people around, but people could still see that this was a fairly large room in this haunt.
Yeah.
They do a hairpin turn, they would go around, they would go back to the back, to the other corner, and then down the back hallway.
Yeah.
And the idea was at least solid from a space use standpoint, but terrible from a UI standpoint.
Right.
Because this hairpin turn just did not work.
No. And we actually did have body bags as you exited the hairpin. That was the first year we introduced those too.
Yeah.
Which were very effective because nobody wanted to go into them.
Yeah. A little too effective.
Yeah.
Well, and
it also obscured that was definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
Because people hadn't seen that.
Yeah. The body bags or corpses or anything hanging is a fine scare as long as it's still abundantly clear that's the path to go.
Right.
And you've got to use lighting to do that. You've got to use design. And this room just failed on every front.
Yeah.
Total screw up.
Yeah.
Total botch. And it was really bad because this room, the back side of the hairpin, the side you were walking past, had a false wall.
Yeah, it had our disappearing wall.
Which, that part was a great scare.
Yeah.
Because it was basically you take your standard drop panel and make it 8 foot wide by 8 feet tall.
Yes.
Make it giant. And
make it out of cloth.
And make it out of cloth so it's actually holdable. And the idea was, you know, they come into that room, they get right next to it, the whole wall disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an actor there jumping out to attack them, or attack.
Yeah.
And the problem with that was the wall would drop, people would be unsure where to go.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have this big burly dude, like I think it was your dad.
It was.
Operating it. And they would just freeze. And we had a couple actually get stuck in the actor area.
Right.
Yeah. Right there.
Yeah. They would not leave. And that year I also made the mistake of doing, of being the stalker in full face paint.
Yeah.
So I couldn't just take off a mask to calm them down.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a haunt mom that year either.
No.
So, yeah. And in fact, I think the reason we did the hairpin was because we only had 3 actors inside the haunt.
Yeah. We were trying to maximize what our resources.
Right.
And, God, that year was so rough for so many reasons.
Yeah.
Like, now I think we typically run with, like, 8 actors.
Yeah. Between 8 and 12.
Yeah. Or yeah. 6 to 12, I would say. 8 is the more norm. So, yeah, that we were scant on actors that year, both front and back of house.
Right. Yeah, it was just you out front.
Yeah. Except for Halloween night. We had help Halloween night.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was rough. And that whole hairpin turn was a big, big lesson on haunt design from the standpoint of always making it clear where to go. And here's the thing, that clear where to go has to be instinctual.
Yeah.
I mean, if you play video games, we did the whole episode about video game and haunt design that I think we need to go back to.
Okay.
But the basic idea of video game design is the player knows instinctively where to go.
Right.
They don't need big flashing arrows. They don't need signs that point them the right way. They just know.
Yeah.
You know in Super Mario to go right.
Yeah.
You know in Super Mario right and up are good.
Yes. And down into green holes.
Yeah.
Green pipes.
Down into green pipes. But in general speaking, right and up is good. You know this instinctively. There's a similar instinct. People don't read arrows. People don't read exit signs.
No, and they don't follow tape on the ground either, because we tried that too.
Yeah, we did try that. That was like the first year we tried that.
That was the first year.
That
and then we realized.
That was another. Well, God, we botched that first year all up, didn't we?
We did. Then we realized people, don't really have their eyes all the way open or looking when they're going through a haunt.
That was the year I think we realized acting in a haunt, being a character actor and doing the stuff inside the haunt is very different from designing and building the haunt.
Yeah, which is why we've spent so much time thinking and talking about it and saying, okay, what is every possible way that somebody could react and then we'll still get surprised?
Yes.
But, well, and, you know.
And that's like been kind of our story of growth on this, as we came at this from rabid actors, people who love scaring,
right,
people who would work at all these haunts, to saying, hey, we want to do something on our own, and then having to basically learn haunt design from the ground up. We watched all the YouTube videos. We knew how to make panels. We knew how to make...
Well, there wasn't a lot of information out there at that time. It was really difficult to...
It definitely has grown.
We actually subscribed to the magazine, too.
Haunted Attraction Magazine,
yeah. Yeah. And saw the, you know, the layout patterns and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, we actually saw, and, I think, yeah, when Leonard Pickle very first published the article about triangle-based isometric layout.
Yeah, we may still have that magazine around somewhere.
I think we have the original time he posted, published that. Or one of the original times, at least, he published. I don't know how many times he's actually published it, but the time first time I was published in that magazine.
Right.
But yeah, that room was a total, total epic fail.
Yeah. Yeah, it took us a while to get everything down.
Well, and a good example of trying to get everything down was the drop ceiling gag.
Yeah.
This one was... Basically, what happened with this is we went to the 13th gate, and
to the House of Shock, actually.
Was it the House? I thought it was 13th Gate.
No, this was House of Shock, because I asked everybody on the way out, what was your favorite things about it? And my brother said the steeple falling into the church was his favorite thing, and my dad said the barrels falling over was his favorite thing.
We're coming up with two different sources for the same scare then. I'm remembering the chain link fence at the 13th Gate. It was way up above.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit later.
It might have been.
But
the point of the matter is, we knew we wanted to do something, a scare from above.
Right. Yeah.
And so, the very first year we tried this, we came up with a drop ceiling idea.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, basically it was a panel of wood would shut on a frame.
Yeah, it was more like a trap door.
Yeah, it really like a reverse trap door.
Yeah.
And the problem was, while it could kind of work when it was timed well, the first one was way too small.
Yeah.
It was not, even though we lit it pretty well, it was just not loud enough. It wasn't scary enough. It wasn't big enough.
Yeah, it wasn't big enough. And the actor who was working it did not have very good timing.
No.
And there was no way to give him better timing.
No. So
because it was so small.
Yeah. And that's just it. It was so small, it needed either super precise timing.
Right.
Or it just needed to be blown up, which was the weird thing about this gag was, we kept thinking, this is a good gag, this is a good scare.
Yeah.
We have to make this work. How do we make this one work?
Right.
So the next year, we moved it.
Yeah.
To a better location, a corner basically, where we could
right.
slow them down a little bit. And we made it significantly, like quadrupled the size.
Oh, yeah. It was a 4x4 piece of wood by this point.
Yeah, at this point it went from being
And since it was so heavy, I was the one operating it.
Yeah, it wasn't just a piece of wood. It was a wooden frame. It was significantly heavy on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And the long result of it was that worked better.
Yeah.
But it still required very precise timing.
And the other reason it worked is because it was at the end of the hallway and there was a turn there.
Yeah.
Right before you got to the end.
Yeah, it was a corner.
And people knew to look around that corner and to slow down for that corner. Because that's where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And the first year we did it, I was singing the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And so I would hold it up in the up position.
Mm-hmm.
And hope that they didn't get stopped before me. And then let it down. And a lot of the times it did work.
No.
But
it still wasn't what it could be.
But people don't look up enough. Even when you hang crap from it,
yeah.
they don't notice that stuff's moving around them.
There's definitely a tunnel vision issue.
Yeah.
Which is both good and bad at the same time for us.
Yeah.
Because when we want to do a scare that's outside the field of vision.
Right.
You know, you have to do something to make them look there. And then I remembered, after thinking about it, the 13th Gate scare, why it worked so well. Because basically what that was, it was a chain link fence, a section of it, a 4-foot
right.
section, that some actor, like above head, would like pretend to shove on you and get caught by a stopper.
Mm-hmm.
And like right at the last second, he'd pull it back. And it was great. But I remembered that as we went into that room, he said, "Hey, up here!"
Yeah.
And so, you know, my dumbasses look up there.
Yeah.
And then he does it. But I'm thinking, oh, that was it, because I never would have looked up at him.
Right.
Otherwise, tunnel vision, white line fever, whatever it is, takes over and you're going through that haunt.
Yeah.
You know, just basically not looking at your surroundings, not looking above, you're not really looking below. And what that makes it great for tactile scares.
Yeah.
Like touching with feathers.
We're talking about basic customers, not...
Yeah, not us.
Yeah.
But even then, I probably wouldn't have noticed that guy with the chain link fence if he hadn't yelled out at me, because he was so far up ahead, up above us. Yeah, it's rough. You've got to hit that field of vision that people are looking in, and so we tried it a few more times. Well, we ended up converting it to, and where it actually really did stick and did work, was we took the mechanism, the basic idea, and instead of making it a drop ceiling, we made it a collapsing tunnel.
Yeah.
And that, that was fun.
Yes, yes, that worked much better. A tunnel that collapsed, it was a wooden frame with fabric that the actor could easily see through, so that whenever the full group got into, in between the frame.
Yeah, it was like an 8 foot to 10 foot zone.
It was an 8 foot, it was an 8 foot
horizontal stretch.
So whenever they stepped into that, they would drop the tunnel, and that put people on the floor.
Yeah, that, because we had strung streamers, we had hung things and stuff.
Not only that, but I think the other reason that was so effective was we had the ceiling in there.
Yeah.
That looked like a starry night.
Yeah.
And the sky collapsed.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, basically the whole, the entire thing basically caved in.
Yeah.
But it caved in such a way that it didn't actually encroach upon the customer's zone.
No, it stayed, it still left 3 feet of walking.
Yeah, even down, you still had 3 feet walking, you still had 8 feet of height.
Right.
But goddamn if it didn't look like it was coming right down on you.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. So that was, we kept working on it.
Yeah.
And eventually we did get something going with that.
Right.
It actually worked out pretty well. Oh, and our final one. This is the only one I think that we talk about that is in reverse.
Right.
The hole in the wall. Because usually what we've talked about here are scares that started off sucking.
Yeah.
And or things that started off sucking and either we just scrapped.
Right.
Because it was a stupid idea from the outset.
Yeah.
Or we hammered on and got better at.
Right.
This is one that we started out with a great, amazing scare that we totally botched when we tried to repeat it.
Yep.
And that's what the hole in the wall is. Basically, this one was, we had a room.
Going back to the limb drop.
Basically, we had the idea for the limb drop room.
Yeah.
But we did not know how the actor was going to activate it.
Right.
We didn't have a clear a vision on that.
Yeah.
And so what we came up with was the idea of suspending the actor through a hole in the wall up about 5 feet in the air, 5 to 6 feet in the air.
Yeah. Yeah, and basically what happened was we were scrounging for ideas, so I went on all of the home haunt how-to DIY sites I could, and there was this picture of a woman standing on the ground with, she was coming through a wall. You could tell how it was built.
Yeah.
There was the guts, the spray foam guts on the wall, and she was hanging out of the top half, and I'm like, well, we could do that, but up in the air.
Yeah. Do that about 3 feet higher.
Yeah.
And make it just look like another prop. Because basically the idea was we had these limbs and heads and feet. Had all these static props in the room.
Yeah.
What's one more static prop?
Yeah. And the other key to that was that I was actually wearing an oversized mask. So it made me look even more like a prop.
Yeah.
Because...
And we took the shirt that you were wearing, the oversized shirt, and staple gunned it around the hole.
Right.
So basically, every time you went into your hole, you were like giving birth to yourself through the shirt. It was great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't remember if we did that or not.
We did.
Okay.
At least in one iteration of it. We actually used the same gag 2 years.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't in it the second year.
No, that was Jen's year when she told me politely to get out of her hole.
Yes. Exactly.
I was not in her hole. but yes. So, with the limb drop room, it was super effective.
Yeah.
But it was a very impromptu gag. We did it out of a piece of masonite wood, I think.
Yeah. One of the last ones that we had at that time.
We don't use masonite anymore. This was a scrap piece. We were like, this was deadline stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was deadline stuff. We took a piece of masonite, reinforced it the best we could.
Yeah.
Some 2x4s.
I actually think it might have been a painting I had.
It might have been.
Because I do 8-foot paintings.
But yeah, basically, and to get up there, you climbed on top of cinder blocks and actually a toolbox.
Yeah, like for the back of a pickup.
Yeah. And then you'd hang out and then you'd be strapped in and it'd be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was not safe. It was not comfortable.
Yeah.
So we ended up tearing it out.
Yeah. And that's the thing about it is that I will work those that I'm not as sure about, but I won't let my other actors work them.
And we looked at it after a while and said, you know, this doesn't fit the direction we're going in terms of safety and in terms of...
Right.
Because that's been one of the things. We try to improve the scare of the haunt every year, and we also try to improve the safety.
Right.
Every year we do something new to make it even more safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been past the point of following fire code compliance.
Oh, yeah.
We've been past that for years. We're going beyond that and ratcheting it up every year.
Yeah.
But anyways, we got rid of it. And then we decided, I think, 2 years ago, we wanted to bring it back.
Right.
But we wanted to build it proper, was the way we said it.
Well, yeah. And because we wanted to make sure that it had its own platform, that it was built very sturdy, and it would be more comfortable for the actor. Those were the things. Because I worked it, I know how uncomfortable it was.
But we completely lost all the measurements.
Yeah.
I.e., we never wrote down the measurements.
Because, well, yeah, there is that. That would help.
You can't lose what you never had.
Exactly.
Yeah, we didn't have the measurements. And when we rebuilt it too high.
Yeah.
And we rebuilt it in a place in the haunt where it just didn't work. It went from being a scare that people were looking directly at when it activated to being a scare from the side. It didn't have the same impact. It didn't work, and we ended up not even staffing that scare the last few nights of the season.
Well, and part of that was that we were supposed to have a younger child actor there who would have probably been comfortable in it, but they didn't show up. So so then we had to have an older actor work it, and that was not comfortable.
No, not for an adult, no.
For an adult or even a teenager.
No, so what we're going to have to do is if we do bring that back, do it, try again, and this time figure out a better way of making it work. I think I've got some ideas, but...
Yeah, me too.
Long and short of it is, that's the one idea I think we've actually made completely worse at the time.
Right, and I think that one and the disappearing wall are examples of scares that have to be done as a scare... From in front.
Yeah.
A scare bag.
Because we've used smaller iterations of the disappearing wall since.
Yes.
And it's worked very, very well.
Yes.
But you're right. It has to be done in
either
a place
on the side or on the front.
In a place where people are looking pretty much straight at it.
Yeah.
And which is difficult because you're trying not to scare back at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, you can do that, especially if you have the timing to hit the group just so.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's rough, and some of these scares are not... I don't think any of these are bad scares.
No.
It's just we've misused them.
Yeah, they took
We built them, we executed them poorly, we misused them.
But most of them, for the most part, we've learned some stuff.
Yeah.
And we've gotten better.
Well, it's like the last year... I think was probably our tightest year in terms of effective scares.
Yeah.
Nothing didn't work.
Yeah.
We had nothing that didn't go over. We had nothing that didn't, you know, have some success there.
Right.
I mean, there were different types of scares. There were more uncomfortable scares, like the thing with the roaches. There were more traditional distract and startles.
Yeah.
But everything had an impact. There was nothing that I went, well, that was a complete flipping waste.
Yeah, I'm really wishing that we would have picked up all of those plastic roaches from last year when it was cold, because now I'm not sure which ones are real, because it's New Orleans.
Well... But yeah, I mean, the main point of this episode is, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes, guys.
Yeah.
We're not even pretending to be perfect.
Oh, no.
We have screwed up so much over the years, and this is just a best of list. We could probably do another episode of equal length. Tom, remember the birthday cake smash we were going to do? The chandelier drop?
Oh, God.
I didn't put that one on this list because it would take forever to explain my logic.
Yeah, that was not good.
That was terrible.
That was terrible.
It was objectively... Well,
and it was extra bad because basically what we did was we put a scare at the end of a run zone.
Yeah.
From another scare.
Yeah.
That was the big problem with that one.
Yeah, that was poor positioning and poor execution of the actual scare, too, on my part. The build was not right for what needed to be done. And lessons were learned, and the main lesson was don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't do that ever again. So, yeah, you know, we made a lot of mistakes. But the thing about it is this, we kind of, in our head, mistakes are fine. Just don't make the same ones over and over and over again. But you make it twice, now it's your fault.
Right, exactly.
Thing. And, you know, what they say is the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Yeah, I think we've managed to avoid the definition of insanity, other than the fact, you know, we run a haunted house. And
it can get kind of insane.
Yeah, that part's insane, but the clinical, like, the definition of insanity, the cliche definition of insanity, we do not follow.
Right.
But anyways, that's about all for this right now. Like I said, we could do another episode like this easy. If there's positive feedback, maybe we will.
Yeah.
God, if you like hearing about how we screw up, let us know.
They hear us screw up every week. What are you talking about?
I don't know. But if you like hearing about specifically how we screw up, let us know. We're on Facebook at Haunt Weekly, Twitter at Haunt Weekly, and at hauntweekly.com. Definitely give us your feedback. Let us know what you're thinking. And that's all I've got. Anything else?
No.
Well, on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode number 66, talking about our haunt blunders. We will see you guys next week.